I'm here. Thanks, Patrick. Give you a little background as to where some of you are aware that we've kind of been involved with this little project to measure carbon across the United States. So what I'm going to talk about today is where all this started. And the concept is we got 3.3 million map units in the Surgo database that carries carbon information. So what could we do with that in terms of distribution across the country? And then how does that agree with what we have in the laboratory? So that's kind of where we're trying to go with this. I should also mention the last time I gave this paper, I had a little medical issue, so hopefully that won't happen again. At any rate, we're all aware of the big discussions about carbon in soils, the potential to sequester additional carbon. We also know that it's a combination of soil properties and land cover, land use, land management that has a large influence on carbon levels in soils. We need to get the best information to the policy people that we possibly can so we can understand how to manage and support programs to conserve the resource and move forward. So we went into this with basically three objectives: was to evaluate organic carbon, soil organic carbon concentration in stocks for the Conterminous U.S. from Surgo data, which is, for those of you who are not into the vernacular, that's the detailed soil survey information. Both from spatial distribution and land cover effects, as best we could derive those. We wanted to do the same thing, particularly to compare it to the measured data that we have at the Soil Survey Laboratory and other data that's coming in. Thank you, those of you who sent data, send more. And we want to compare these just to see how good we were doing. So, onward and upward. For the Surgo, the map units are composed of components, different soils. They're not one pure soil. So we took the organic carbon concentration, bulk density, coarse fragments, summed those values after the appropriate math to calculate a carbon stock. For each component, we then derived a spatially weighted average organic carbon stock for the map unit. And there are many map units that minor parts are not named, so it may not add to 100%. It may only be 80, 70, 90. In those cases, we just corrected it to 100%, and that's what we did. There are areas of the country, this map that you're seeing here, the green is where Surgo is available. Large portions of public lands in the western U.S. have not been mapped in detail yet. So where we had that, where Surgo was not available, we used Statsco data, which is a more general data set, but we applied the same routines for calculating stocks. We decided that we wanted to attempt to make some land cover adjustments to the Surgo data. I've received some criticism for this, and probably rightly so, but I'm going to go forward with it anyhow. So for each pixel on a 30-meter grid for the United States, from the USGS National Land Cover Database, we determined the dominant land cover for the map unit. So then for each pixel, we had a choice. If you go into the Surgo database, every layer of every component has three values. It has a representative value, which is intended to represent the dominant condition for that soil in the area where the map unit was mapped. Then there's a low and a high. So if the dominant land cover, if the vegetation we saw, we also determined the dominant land cover for the map unit. I've already said that. So if the land cover for the pixel was the same as the dominant land cover, we used a representative value. If the land cover was something that we expected to have lower organic carbon contents, for example, cropland in a dominantly forested area, we used the low value. Conversely, if the pixel was something that we thought would have higher organic matter in it than the dominant condition, we used the high value. And so we just wrote this little simple rule set and drove forward. We did not make similar corrections for bulk density because, to be honest, we didn't think we were that smart. So at any rate, that's the way we came up with this land cover differential that we've applied. We also used PADON data for the conterminous U.S., and we made the same calculations except for measured values. Now, the map you see here represents the point data that we have in the NCSS database as of probably a year ago. There are more there now. The point is we have data for about 30, 40,000 PADONs. It continues to increase. The interesting thing is, if you want organic carbon and bulk density for all horizons to a meter, there are only 3,000 of those that meet those criteria. Because, I mean, I've sampled many soils and said we don't need bulk density of the A horizon and drove on. And so that's common. But still, we've got 3,000 PADONs that we can compare to, which in the law of large numbers, that is a large number. Now, we aggregated this data. I'm going to show you the map in a minute of the map unit data, but it's hard to handle. So we chose to use land resource regions to aggregate the data to talk about geographic distribution across the country. So this is a land resource region map. It's MLRAs are subdivisions of these. So there are some similarities in agriculture and geology and soils and those kinds of things that serve for the basis. So we felt pretty good about that. For those of you that are not familiar, which most of you aren't because I wasn't until I started messing with it, you can't see the numbers very well on this map. The subsequent maps, hopefully you can see them better. They're numbered consecutively as letters. So A is the Pacific Northwest. U is Peninsula Florida. In general, it goes north to south, west to east. So you can kind of, a few key things. The Corn Belt's M. The Great Plains are F, G, and H. Pacific Northwest is A. I need to go backwards. I need to go forward. There. The Piedmont is, what is it? T is Atlantic Coastal Plain. Maybe you can keep up with it. If you do hydric soils, you're more familiar with these. So at any rate, results. So here's the map of the country. No real surprises. If you look at it, there are a few political faults if you look carefully, but we won't concentrate on those. So in terms of stocks by LRR, and these are means for LRRs, You can see the distribution. Again, there's nothing here that should come as very much of a surprise. Pacific Northwest is high. Forested, cool temperatures, high rainfall in many areas, kind of what you'd expect. Similarly, the desert southwest, high temperatures, low rainfall, not much primary production, low carbon stocks. Corn Belt, the northern Great Plains, this area, again, either monosoils, cool temperatures, poor drainage, forested. New England, pretty high, forested. The Atlantic Coastal Plain, warm temperatures, but poorly drained soils, carbon accumulation. The one that surprised me most was Peninsula Florida, but we've got the Everglades. We've got a lot of wet soils in that part of the world. So actually, the map makes sense. I felt reasonably comfortable with it. If we look at it as a bar graph to kind of give you some concepts of numbers, the upper graph is actually organic carbon concentration of the surface horizon. Now, that may either be an A or an O horizon. I got to work on that. But you'll notice, again, Pacific Northwest, it's about what you expect. And there's reasonably good correspondence between concentration and stocks, but not in all cases. And we have to remember, when we start talking about carbon stocks, number one, rock fragments have a large impact. So if you're in a mountainous terrain with lots of rocks, it's going to have a big impact on carbon stocks. Similarly, if you're in those kinds of terrains where you have shallow soils to bedrock and you're trying to calculate to a meter and you only got 30 centimeters of soil, you're going to have a little issue there. So, again, no great shocks. What I think is reasonably good data. Now, we can go to a land cover breakdown there. Again, nothing particularly surprising. Cropland was consistently the lowest carbon stocks in each of the LRRs. Now, let's look at the comparison to Pettine data. This made me feel really good, because the only one that's really a major departure between what is measured in the laboratory and the aggregated data that's available in the soil survey is Peninsula Florida. And the issue there is one issue, and that's you over here. We only had four Pettines in the database. So we got big error bars too. Now, we're about to incorporate all of Florida's data into our database, into your database. So we'll redo this when we get those numbers. But you know, it's a reasonable agreement. So the summary, if you take our calculations for a meter from Surgo, we got about 65 petagrams of carbon in the conterminous U.S., which is pretty much in agreement with what most people's estimates are. The concentration in stocks differ a little bit. Concentrations are really related to temperature and land cover, or kind of general land cover. Stocks, drainage, soil depth, and some subsoil characteristics begin to play a role. So there are some differences. Land cover, forest and grassland, by our way of doing it, were about the same. Cropland, and it was higher than cropland. Nothing, no earth-shattering news there either. Surgo and Pettine data are pretty similar, particularly at this level of generalization. When you get to specifics, there are specifics. And I think these data are pretty useful for helping us understand distribution and some factors in controlling carbon distribution in the country. I think I must have that. Yeah. At any rate.
Thank you, Larry.